Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Sorry for the little bit of a delay. We had a technological breakdown there for a moment, but hey, that's the magic of Internet radio here on BBSRadio.com. We're so delighted that you're able to join us this afternoon, and we have a wonderful guest to share with you. Now, there will be an opportunity for you to call in later on in the show, and we'll be sure to give out that kind of information to you as we go along. But while we are going to take a moment here to talk with a dad who has had a very, very unique and special experience, his wonderful book is called Counting on a Miracle. And I want to welcome to the airwaves today Clifford J. Fazzolari. Clifford, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's great to be talking with you. It is a unique story, and from a dad's perspective, I feel there's a lot I can share with your listeners.
Well, I felt it was a significant time to be able to have you right now as a guest. Father's Day is coming up just around the corner, and for people that think that dads don't get emotional over situations, you have a very special little boy named Jacob. And your book, Counting on a Miracle, is all about this very special child and his very special experience. And for those of you listening, I think sometimes we don't get the opportunity to talk with fathers or to hear their side of their experience. Most of the time, we talk to the moms and we hear that side. But dad's usually pretty stoic about it. But you decided, Clifford, you decided you wanted to tell your story. Why was that important to you to write about your son? And again, right on the cover, you've got that picture of that beautiful child. Why was this important to you to tell Jacob's story?
Well, it was an experience where I was learning to become a father. I mean, Jacob was just 4 years old at the time that he was diagnosed with exercise-induced asthma. And they actually diagnosed him when he was 2 years old. Anytime he would run around a little bit, as kids are prone to do, he would start breathing real heavy. And we took him to a number of doctors and specialists, and the diagnosis was the same each time. It was exercise-induced asthma. And one day when he was just 4 years old, he really started to struggle for a breath of air. And we rushed him to the emergency room, and they did a chest x-ray for the first time in his life, and they found that a massive tumor was growing on his chest. It actually covered his entire chest. His x-ray was dead white.
Oh, my word. Now, let me ask you something. When they diagnosed your son with this exercise-induced asthma, what were their recommendations at that time? And of course, at the age of two, doctors don't want to submit kids to x-rays or things like that any more than necessary. But what kind of medication was he put on? What was the recommendation, just to keep him quiet?
Well, actually, they gave us breathing. He had breathing treatments that he had to do.
And
he was also getting steroid shots that was supposed to clear up the asthma. And in reality, you know, in hindsight, what they did was make the tumor grow to epic proportions.
Incredible. So, now, how did the steroids affect this growth? How did it cause it to grow to epic proportions?
It was whatever they were given them actually fed the steroids.
So it was like whatever was the malformation there in the form of cells, they just thought, gee, they were having breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it was a embryonic tumor, so you know, he was born with it, but it was, you know, it was very small. And I think, you know, one simple x-ray at a certain time would have solved the problem. We would have found the tumor a lot quicker, and he wouldn't have been in such dire condition when it was finally discovered. The thing that was really distressing about it was, you know, you go to the doctor, and you're pretty much put your trust into what they're trying to achieve, and you believe them, you know. And so it was shocking to find out that he had the tumor. I was actually at a Buffalo Bills football game when my wife paused. You know, his breathing had been, he had been struggling for it in the morning, but I didn't think twice about it. And I think that you originally asked, you know, why did I write the story? You know, from a father's perspective, I think that you know, when your kids are born, there's pretty much anything you would go to the moon and back if they needed you to, you know. There's that aspect of it, and here I was struggling with just trying to keep my child alive. And I wanted to tell the story to other parents that may be out there that have a sick child and maybe need to grow a little bit as they suffer through some of the illness and symptoms of that.
Well, now, when the diagnosis was made with this massive tumor, that when they took the X-ray, it was all white. It was just so large.
Yes,
that must have been absolutely astonishing, first of all, to the physicians, because he was only 4 years old. What was the next step? What happened then?
It was astonishing. And I mean, the thing is, there was a buzz, actually, in the emergency room at Children's Hospital, where you could hear people whispering our names, you know, and you could hear, you know, doctors being called in to take a look at this X-ray because it was so unique. And I actually still was of the understanding. I mean, as far as the medical things for my children, I couldn't put the eardrops in. I wouldn't know where they went, you know. I mean, so I didn't know a lot of what was going on. And, you know, I just kept hearing things, and I was like, no, he's going to be all right. You know, maybe he's got pneumonia, or maybe he's got this or that. And that's what I kept thinking. And then a nurse walked into the room, and I said, well, what is it? She said, oh, it's a massive tumor. It's unbelievable. And I almost passed out.
Amazing.
And I actually got dizzy standing there when she said that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, how does this happen? You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went from there. And what I was in a unique position because the women in Children's Hospital of Buffalo is one of the top 20 children's hospitals in the country, which is, I had no idea. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I just live in Buffalo, and luckily it was only 10 miles away from me. And what they did was, you know, they stepped back instead of panicking us. They stepped back and they looked at it. You know, kind of logically, they decided that, you know, there's no way that we can perform surgery on him because one of his lungs had been collapsed for a full year.
Oh, for heaven's sakes!
Yes, we didn't even know this, you know, and they figured that if they were to even try to perform a biopsy to see what the tumor was made of, that he wouldn't make it through the biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to treat it blind and try to shrink it, which was also an interesting dynamic because my wife and I were looking at each other going, are we rooting that it's cancerous? So it shrinks when they give him the chemo? And that was a really strange angle to come at it from. But that's where we were. They actually administered chemo for about, you know, a full week of treatment. And then they sent us home. And his breathing was better. So whatever medicines that he was getting, you know, allowed him to continue on, you know, but he still had this massive tumor pressing on everything, you know.
Now, let me stop you for just a minute. I want to ask you a question because you said you wanted to help other parents. And when you have a child, like you said, that, you know, here you are a dad, mom is always taking care of giving the kids aspirins or, you know, like you said, the eardrops, whatever else they might need. And kids always have things going on with them when they're little. And you weren't involved, and here you are at the hospital. When you and your wife were advised of what they recommended in a way of a procedure, here you've been given this information about a child that, and you have no control over it. You have absolutely no information. How much time did you have to make a decision relative to whether or not you were going to have the chemotherapy for your son?
you know, I mean, you kind of are just, first of all, the most amazing thing about it is how it flips your world upside down. And all the little tiny things that seem so important are just gone. You're just worried about the health of that child. And you're kind of walking in a fog, to tell you the truth. Especially those first couple of days, it was I was just lost. I was like, this is not reality. It doesn't feel like reality. So the people that we were talking to, we kind of understood that we were in a good facility, the Children's Hospital, and we knew that the enormity of his x-ray was lending us, you know, the top people that they had at the hospital. So we had some trust again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a position of trusting doctors again, as much as we did when, you know, they misdiagnosed the asthma. So, you know, it was kind of like, well, what choice do we have? I mean, we can look around and see if there's another place where we can get them treated, but I certainly didn't know anything about tumors, teratoma tumors. I had never heard those two words together in my life.
Mm-hmm. And there was nothing in your family history to even relate to something like this. You didn't even have a friend that had gone through anything like this.
Right. We were completely blind. And the doctors at the beginning also were. You know, they had a general idea, but without the biopsy, they were kind of treating them blind also.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one of the amazing aspects of that hospital is that you feel like they're treating their own children. You know, they give you that feeling like we're going to make sure that your son goes home. You know, and
mm-hmm.
they can't always guarantee that, but that's the way they made us feel. You know, they
yes.
made us feel like we were part of their family, which was very important, and we trusted them. But we also did a lot of research on the internet, things of that sort, and that's where I thought the book could be a benefit to other parents, because there wasn't a whole lot of what we were going through. There wasn't a lot of, geez, when your kid gets sick, this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and being a dad, from the perspective of all the things that I was feeling, and I wanted that out there so other dads could understand, you know, you're not alone.
Right. And here you are, and I agree with you, at the children's hospitals, the people that are on staff there are just incredible. They really put their hearts out on the line many, many times. And it can be very devastating when you have something like this come in, because it isn't in the medical books. It's not something that is there available where you flip to page 44 and this is what you do. So you've made a very good point here. Now, how did you and your family handle it? Now, you had another child at home, didn't you?
Two other children. How
were you handling it as a family? I mean, neither one of you were going to leave your son, your four-year-old, in the hospital all by himself. And I can relate to this because I had an experience with my daughter when she was small. And I just know when you have a child in the hospital, you want to be there. You don't want to not be there. You want that kid to know that there is someone that loves them and that they're going to be okay somehow. That's very important to do that. And I know your family did it. How did you rotate this? What did you do?
Well, we were there every minute that he was there. So we kind of just slipped into the roles, my wife and I. It was almost like we didn't even communicate what we were going to do, but we knew that I would have had to hire a SWAT team to get her out of there at night. You know, she wanted to spend the nights with him. And so we handled the fact that she would be there at night. I would get there early in the morning, and she would come home, take a shower, you know, and come right back. I mean, she was pretty much there all the time. And in the meantime, we had a great family support where my mother-in-law watched my youngest, Sam, and, you know, we kind of rotated the other children around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we were always at the hospital. And, you know, it's funny because you look back at it now, and the older child, Matt, he says, geez, you know, when he was in the hospital, he got a lot of presence and a lot of attention, you know. So it was, him, it would seem like a little bit of a break for Jake, you know. But yeah, it wasn't easy. But you just kind of slip into it and say, this is where our attention's got to be for right now.
Now, Jacob had to go through a particular type of therapy. And this the person that I'm interviewing today is Clifford J. Fazzolari, a father who took the time to write down his personal experience with his four-year-old son, who was diagnosed with a tumor that was so massive it had already collapsed one lung. It had been that way for over a year. And the child was literally dying. And so this is a process that you were going through. You knew that they were pulling for you in every way that they could, so they were doing the chemotherapy. How was this done? How was this treated, and how long was he in the hospital?
He was initially in the hospital for about 10 days for the chemotherapy treatment. Then they sent us home. We were home without any kind of input from the hospital. It was awful quiet for about a week. And, you know, we were looking at each other going, you know, what's happening, you know? And in the meantime, the hospital had taken his case and actually went to San Francisco at a conference, presented his case, and got an avenue for treatment, which we had no idea. When we brought Jake back into the hospital, his tumor hadn't shrunk, and we were back at, you know, stage one, where any type of operation would put him in, you know, deep jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
So on a Friday afternoon, my wife and I went in and sat down with the surgeon, and he started this conversation by saying, do you understand that there's about an 80% chance that your child isn't going to make it through the operation? And I mean,
wow.
after having him home for a week and seeing him, you know, get back some sort of semblance of his life, and then thinking of all the possibilities of the 80% chance of not having him pass, you know,
mm-hmm.
that Monday.
That'd be devastating.
Oh, it was extremely devastating. But he finished that by, you know, by asking us if we understood that it was a very risky operation. And then he said, well, we have every intention of, you know, getting him through this. You know, and one of the things that he had mentioned to me was, you know, if you got a God out there, you know, start praying to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where the counting on a miracle kind of clicked.
That's how you got your title, counting on a miracle, because that's where you were. Odds 80-20, 20% that he could make it, 80% that he wouldn't. That has to be very difficult for any physician, anyone, to say to a parent after going through what you've gone through, knowing what you know, and then having to look at you and say, this is what we see. So tell us what happened, because your son is now going to be 9 years old in 3 days.
Yes.
He's doing beautifully. What happened? What did they do?
Well, you know, we brought him in on Monday morning for the operation, and, you know, he was symptomatic. He had no symptoms whatsoever. I mean, he was completely healthy, and he was, you know, he was vibrant. He was actually very happy, and he knew he was having to go through some sort of procedure, but everything was going to be okay because we were going to get rid of the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He understood that, and he was ready to go, and 5 minutes before the operation started, they came to take him to the operating room. And the thing that just tears me up, and even as I say it now, he turned to me and said, Dad, I don't want to go. I don't want to go yet. I'm not ready.
Oh, boy.
And that's what he kept yelling as they brought him to the operating room doors. And I mean, my wife and I just stood in the hallway and cried, you know. And a couple hours into the operation, we knew that what was the danger part was putting him under. And if once they put him under, there was a chance that if he could handle that with one little lung working,
mm-hmm.
that he might be okay. And about a couple hours into the operation, I walked out into the hallway, and one of the surgeons walked out of the operating room. And I almost fainted there because I figured, you know, that short into it, he shouldn't be out in the hall. And he turned to me and said, it's a piece of cake.
Awesome. It's a piece of cake. What did they find in there? What, with the tumor that they discovered, were they able to get it all out? What was happening there?
It was resting on in his chest cavity, but it was just resting on top. It hadn't compressed any of his major organs at that point. What they did, which is what they learned in San Francisco prior to it, was they didn't put him under initially. And Jake told me this afterwards. He said, "Dad, why'd you let him take me? They put a mask on my face, and then they cut me with a knife." And I thought, oh, my God, and, you know, that can't be true. So I called the doctor, and he said, "You know, we didn't want to tell you that, but that's how we did it. We put the mask on, we gave him a local anesthetic, we started the surgery, we freed up the tumor. When his lungs were capable of withstanding, that's when we put him under."
Mm-hmm.
So,
amazing.
Yeah, and it was a technique that saved his life. And I think in that one-week interval when we were home, they found out exactly how they were going to do it. The tumor was made up of hair and bones and calcium deposits, and it weighed 4.5 pounds.
4.5 pounds.
4.5 pounds on a child that weighed about 30 pounds at the time.
Amazing.
And you know, since the fact, you know, we did some research for the book, and it's not all that uncommon of a tumor. In actuality, a lot of children make it through their adolescence. And then the tumor is discovered when they're in their 20s or 30s.
And oh, wow.
Even more massive than that. They said that some of them were 12, 15 pounds when they were taken out. So it's a tumor that grows as the child grows.
And it's made up of hair, bones, calcium. It's like parts of their body that are not put to use are put into this tumor. It's almost like it's a part of a disposal system.
Exactly. Yeah, or, you know, one of the other theories was a twin that didn't go, you know.
Hmm.
You know, like, you know, which is really spooky if you think about it. We try not to, you know, go that route. But, I mean, that was one of the things that I asked one of the surgeons about that. And he thought, you know, that's a possibility.
Fascinating things.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing is as we got Jake home, and his recovery was unbelievable. Children are just super at that kind of thing. I mean, I stubbed my toe, and I'm out for 3 weeks, you know. I mean, he was basically up and around and ready to go, you know.
Go out and play football or soccer. Didn't want to sit still.
I can hear him jumping on the trampoline right now. So
mm-hmm.
He's 100% healthy, and he really... He's probably the healthiest of my three kids. He doesn't get colds or anything else. I mean, so it's been wonderful for us.
Well, that is really great. Now, your son is turning 9 years of age in 3 days. I know as a family you're very, very grateful. And when you have a scenario like this, which is not in the medical books, which is off the wall that has to be dealt with immediately, and you have parents out there, your book would enable them to see how they can deal with certain things. I don't know that anybody is ever prepared for that. I don't care how many books you read, whatever, but when you're informed, sometimes you are able to handle things a little bit better than when you're not informed. And I think that the book that you have put together, Counting on a Miracle, about your son, Jacob, is just absolutely wonderful. It is good reading. It comes from your perspective as a dad, which I think is extremely important. Now, you have also put together a website, Clifford, and
yes.
You've got what kind of information on the website? What's the website address? How can people get in touch with you if they want more information?
The website is countingonamiracle.com. And it was put together by my publisher, and it basically tells the story, you know, as we've talked about it today. The book can be ordered through the website. I can be reached on email at the website. The email address is listed right on there. Mm-hmm. And the book can also be ordered at Amazon.com or through my publisher at toll-free number, 888-542-2665. The book was written for a unique reason, and it was just kind of to tell the readers, you know what, enjoy your life. You can love, you might love your children, you might think you love your children, but until you're faced with a situation like this, you have no idea how limitless your love is, you know. And I think that's why I wrote the book, was to kind of give somebody, you know, a perspective of, wow, all the stuff we're worried about, like who wins American Idol or, you know, who's on Survivor this week or any of that stuff, kind of, you know, takes a back seat in when you realize that, you know, one moment can change your life.
That is very, very true. And having been a parent and gone through a few of those dark moments, and they are dark, they are very frightening. But your book, Counting on a Miracle, Clifford, it really can make a difference. It's something that I think is inspiring. It is heartwarming. And I think the credits that you give to the people at the Women and Children's Hospital in Buffalo, New York is great. The staff bent over backwards to help in every way that they could. And I think that says a lot. I know that doctors are human beings, nurses are human beings, and they don't have all the answers. But boy, they sure did give it a good shot. In fact, going that extra mile to check out information to be sure that they looked at as many options as they possibly could. That's quite a positive statement.
It's amazing because in the freakiest of all things, when I walked out into the parking lot that night on my way home after the surgery, I saw the surgeon, the head surgeon, and I said, I don't even know what to say to you. And he said, I was just doing my job. And that mm-hmm. struck me that I don't do my job like that every day. And that's what I told him. I said, you know, if you'd have had a bad day, you know, it could be. But it's just amazing that they can have that perspective that that's their job, is to save my child's life.
Mm-hmm.
The sense of gratitude to those people is just tremendous.
Yes, because they're very dedicated professionals. Well, Clifford, this has been a delight having you as a guest. For those of you listening, if you'd like to find out more about this wonderful book, Counting on a Miracle, go to the website, countingonamiracle.com. This is a dad's story. Usually we hear it from the moms. Father's Day is just around the corner. This is a dad that is celebrating Father's Day in a whole different way than he ever did before. Clifford, thank you so much for being my guest, and I wish you continued success with
thank
this book, and thank you for sharing your message.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be going to break. Telephone lines will be open when we come back. Don't go away. More good things to share. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, the Hour of Mind Power, and I hope you enjoyed my guest, Clifford Fazioli, as much as I did. Wonderful man. And I wanted to, again, give out his website, countingonamiracle.com. Now, by the way, telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, let me light up your life with a little bit of insight. Here is this toll-free telephone number to call into from anywhere, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And I'll be just taking your first name or your initial. I like to know where you're calling from in the country. And then after that, just let me do my thing, and I'll just give you all kinds of different points of information as I perceive it, and then you're welcome to ask a question. So just know you can call me at 877-876-5227. Well, if you were listening to my show earlier in the week, you know I had a particular experience that none of us like to have, and that is that somehow someone had gotten a hold of our credit card information and was using it. Well, I was given some additional information. We also had a caller that day that had given us information about people in the military needing to pay attention to certain things. And then I happened to have something else that came across my desk, and I thought, this is good information, so let me share it with you today. Debit or credit, which one is right for you? And I was talking with a very good friend of mine. shortly after I had done the radio show telling her about the experience we had with credit cards, and she said, well, we don't have credit cards. We use debit cards. Well, I found this information, and Jerry Detweiler is very much involved in helping people understand what works best for them, the debit cards or the credit cards. But there are some things you need to know about the advantages and disadvantages of each. Now, if you're going to make an online purchase or a catalog purchase, you should always use a credit card. Jerry said, by law, you are not liable for more than $50. Not more than $50 if a thief steals your credit card number. And if you choose to use your debit card, you have to notify the bank within 48 hours to get to the same $50 cap on your liability. So what if someone ends up taking your debit card and is using it? You haven't a clue. I mean, it's tucked away safely in your wallet. So you don't have a clue about this. They're out using your debit card like crazy, and you have no protection if you're not aware of it within 24 hours. If you wait a few days, you could be responsible for up to $500 or more. So I would encourage you, check with your bank relative to your debit cards. What kind of protection do they offer you? Because every facility is different. So you need to find out about that. And just knowing what our experience was this past week with the credit cards and finding out that all kinds of things had been processed, they hadn't been accepted, but they had been processed using our card. So you need to be aware of these things. Also, an everyday purchase, like at the grocery store, choose a debit card if you're going to use a card because you're not going to pay any interest. For everyday purchases, if you use your debit card so the money comes straight from your bank account, that's an advantage for you. And I know lots of times people, if they are traveling, they get special cards that they take with them. And if they do want to use a debit card, they'll set up sometimes a private account so that that's all that that account will be used for. There's just so much money in there. And don't choose credit cards for your everyday purchases because you're going to get charged interest. We all know that. So when you use your credit cards on little everyday things like gasoline or restaurants or groceries, you might end up paying hundreds of dollars extra for that small amount of money. So it's better to use the debit for that. Or write a check if they take a check. Also, a big purchase, use your credit card because you can put a hold on the payment according to the Fair Credit Billing Act if the item is unsatisfactory. Plus, many cards offer free extended warranties. And I knew of an individual that had ordered an extremely big ticket item. And fortunately for them, they had put it on their credit card. They had thought of paying cash for it. And at the last minute, they changed their mind. They put it on their credit card, and this large ticket item ended up being defective. And they would have had a major problem because the person or the business they bought it from was giving them a difficult time. They said, no sweat, I'm just going to stop the credit card payment. And so that, and it gave them some leverage that they didn't have before. So that's something to keep in mind. Also, on a big ticket item, remember, if you use a debit card, that money is going to be taken instantly from your checking account. And so you'll likely only get store credit if you have a complaint. So there's advantages to the debit, and there's advantages to the credit, and on the other side, there's disadvantages. So it's a good idea to become aware of that. This is Donna Sebo with the Hour of Mind Power, and if you would like to chat with me today, give me a call at our toll-free number, which is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. I'll be glad to give you an intuitive reading on the air. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I like to know where you're calling from, so don't hesitate to give me a call. I had started also the other day and wasn't able to finish it, how to deal with blocks in life. And no matter how successful we are, whether it's physically, financially, career-wise, we always end up dealing with setbacks. That's just a part of the human experience, and we're going to have more as we go on in life. Now, there's one lady who used an obstacle to help prepare her to go into a different direction in her life. Instead of accepting what would have been perceived as a real disadvantage, she said, no, I'm going to take a different positioning on it. Now, this young lady worked in a very large corporation. In the division that she was working in was going to get cut back, and she knew this was coming. She really liked the company she worked for, and she wanted to be transferred to another division. However, the boss that she had liked her so much, did not want her to go anywhere else. And they said, no, we're not going to give you the transfer because you're really just very much needed right where you are. Well, she looked at this, and instead of getting really agitated about it, she decided she was going to look out for doing the best kind of job she could right where she was, even though she knew that her whole division was going to be moved around and terminated, a lot of people laid off. She said she was also going to start job hunting on the side. And what she did, she called the senior executives in the other divisions of this company and exchanged information with them about her qualifications and what they might need in the future. And what happened is that by approaching the management, this company was very, very large, by just developing a rapport with different executives in other divisions of this company, when the time came for her section to be downsized and or eliminated, she found there was a job available for her. People were saying, we want you in our particular division of the company. But she did something very special. One, she did not get angry, feel like anybody owed her anything. She took a positioning of attitude saying, what is it that I can do that will empower me in this situation? I know my bosses are like me where I am, but I do know the company's going through this change. She didn't whine. She didn't tell a sad story to any of the people she approached. She just said, you know, I love working for this company, and would you mind if I submitted a resume to you, just in case you find that there's something in the future that I just might be perfect for? What a way to approach this. It's a great attitude. Maybe you could use that in your own life. Maybe you're part of a committee working with a group of people and you say, I really don't know that this is really the group I want to be with. Well, ask yourself some questions. Where else could you put your talents? How can you sell yourself? How can you make people aware of what you have to offer? It's a positioning that I think lots of times we need to think about. So let's break it down a little bit more clearly. She clarified her alternatives. So she looked at what her options were. She felt that just because one door was going to be closing eventually didn't mean she couldn't check out some others, open, see what was behind them, and maybe see if there was something of value for her. Also, widening your scope. Obstacles often force us to, well, sort of search around for different choices, and you're always going to learn something new. And in her case, she started doing some networking outside of the area that she was so familiar with, and it helped her build ties with people. And one of those people eventually said, I like your attitude. I like what you have to offer. Come on and be a part of my team. She said also one of the things that was very important is that she understood other people's needs. And she said you need to appreciate that sometimes difficult choices have to be made by people that might be your superiors. They're not having fun doing this, but they might have to do this for whatever is best for what's going on. And she said, wouldn't it be nice if you kept your eyes open for someone that you knew of that might be in a dead-end job, and maybe you could give them a helping hand at some time or recommend them to somebody if you know that it's time for them to grow and develop in a different direction. It's a different type of attitude regarding leadership and being able to make life and the world a better place. But you know what? I think it makes a difference. Sometimes when we recognize talents in other people, it's a good idea to let others know about them because they may be able to fill a very special purpose. They could bring a benefit that's a win-win for everybody. Donna Sebo here. I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. And when we come back, that phone line is open if you'd like to chat. We have got all kinds of good things to share with you. Also, I wanted to give you some information about dogs today. I came across some details regarding the wellness of animals that I think you might be interested in. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227 if you'd like to chat. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo here with BBSRadio.com, where not only do you hear wonderful music, but we also have great programming, and I invite you to mark on your calendars. As of July the 1st, I'm going to be changing the time of my programming. We're going to be moving the Donna Sebo Show, the Hour of Mind Power, to 11 a.m. Pacific time. So if you're on Central, it'll be 1 o'clock your time. If you're on the East Coast, it'll be 2 o'clock in the afternoon your time. So I just want to mention that so that you will not think I've disappeared into the ethers. It'll just be a different time change, and we're looking forward to that. Now, I want to let you know who's going to be on the air with me tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jeanette Freeman. Have you ever asked yourself the question, why? Why did this happen to me again? Well, Dr. Jeanette Freeman has written a book about that very subject. She has some wonderful tips that she's going to be sharing with us. Also, next week we have a marvelous lineup of people. For those of you that maybe have had to deal with alcoholism, either on a personal level or maybe a very dear friend or, you know, associate has gone through some difficult times, this is about Lois Wilson. She is the wife of Bill Wilson, who is the person that originated Alcoholics Anonymous. Her story is poignant. And Bill Brochere is the guest that I'm going to have. I've interviewed Bill before. The story is absolutely awesome, and he knew Lois personally, and she gave him permission to write her story. So it's an incredible, incredible story that we'll be sharing on Monday. Then Larry Ackerman, The Identity Code. If it sounds a little mysterious, well, we'll just leave it at that because The Identity Code will catch your attention. Then we're going to be talking about psychics on Wednesday. Gary Schwartz is a researcher, and his book is Truth About Mediums. Of course, this is a topic that's very close to my heart, being involved in the psychic area for well over 35 years. I just find that the research is just fascinating. Then we'll be talking with Christina Baldwin on Thursday, the story catcher, and then a very nice guy, a former Navy pilot, and his name is Bill Goss, and his book, which is an incredible story, unbelievably, unbelievably unique, and it's titled There's a Squirrel in My Coffee, and it's a true story, and it's absolutely wonderful. Bill is a great guy, so we're going to be chatting with him and just having some wonderful, wonderful conversation next week. Tell your friends, invite them to tune into the show, and if you'd like to chat with me, the telephone number to call into is 877-876-5227. Now, I said I was going to talk to you about animals and wellness. If you've had dogs, and we used to have Scottish Terriers, I can remember that when my first Scottie developed a liver condition, I was so astonished. And then I found that Scotties were prone to certain diseases. Well, any of us who are dog lovers will recognize that certain breeds have dispositions towards certain physical ailments, like your German Shepherds, hip dysplasia. You have all kinds of things. Well, this is some information that I thought I would share with you to inform you, and it's about animals and the things that have evolved with animals because of inbreeding. And the earliest ancestors of golden retrievers were chosen because of their yellow coat and their wonderfully patient personality. I've never met a golden retriever that is just not loving. However, with these desired traits, there was an unfortunate side effect, a genetic predisposition to cancer, which ends up claiming the life of up to 63% of these dogs. I had no idea that that many retrievers suffered from cancer, and it's a genetic patterning, apparently. And this is one study that was done, and they're doing a lot more, and golden retrievers are far from alone. The selection process that has given dogs such appealing human-like behaviors has also given many of these breeds human-like genetic diseases. Now, recently they were able to decode the complete dog genome, and this coincidence could aid in the search for cures to many devastating types of illnesses. Humans have such diverse genetic makeups that it's often very difficult to pin down the common DNA flaws among a group of individuals. Now, they've been able to do that in certain groupings, but it's still pretty tough. But in the line of purebred dogs selected for their similarity over dozens of generations, Identifying a corresponding gene is as easy as picking out a chihuahua, they said, in a lineup of St. Bernards. Now, diseases that researchers are focusing on at this time include gastric cancer, and chow chows are especially affected by this, diabetes, samoys. But I can tell you, I have known a number of pet owners where their dogs, all kinds of breeds, have ended up with diabetes. Abnormal blood clotting is very common among beagles. They have what they call a bubble boy disease in basset hounds. And what that is a signature of a very bad immune system, which I think really can apply to most of these. Epilepsy, your miniature wire-haired doxies are prone to that. Narcolepsy, and this one just stunned me. Dobies, Doberman Pinschers, are very prone to that. Who would have thought just the dog just all of a sudden stopping in his track, laying down, going to sleep? Narcolepsy. Lymphoma, golden retrievers. This is a cancer. And that one especially, as I mentioned, was very significant because, in my mind, it related very strongly to one of my Scottish Terriers. In fact, we learned from the vets when our little Scotty, our last Scotty, was very, very ill. And we learned that the lymphoma probably was brought about, because Scotties don't get this very often, by pesticides. So there are a lot of things we're learning, and we're going to learn more. And you need to remember, just like us, we have to pay attention to what goes into us and how we take care of ourselves. The same thing is applicable to those pals that we have, our wonderful dogs and cats and birds and lizards and snakes and spiders and all of these other critters that share the planet with us. And many of them are pets. We need to realize that the environment shapes them just as much as it does us. Well, my goodness, we're out of time. I'm looking forward to being with you tomorrow. Wherever you are, just know that you're so special, and I'm so glad that you're a part of this experience of life, and maybe one day we'll have a chance to meet. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a great day. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.